This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get back to the NBA Finals coming up later on as the Warriors get another championship. Plus, in a few minutes, Shane Beamer was in town last night. We'll talk about the Gamecocks. A little State of the Union for Clemson and South Carolina. I think what's interesting is Clemson kind of expect things to be the same as last year from a personnel perspective or like the identity of the team. South Carolina is a little bit different. I think they'll be changing in a lot of areas. I'll explain what I mean coming up here in just a few moments. Plus, Clemson introduced their new baseball coach. We'll hear a little bit from him in a little bit as well. Hey, next week is Donor Appreciation Week. I'm going to be off, heading out of here after the show today to go give some plasma once again. Donate some plasma, and then I'll be hanging out next week with CSL Plasma. I'll be doing my show from CSL Plasma in North Charleston on Monday, and then also on Thursday as well. They love me over there, let me tell you, because as I always say, there's only so many things I do well in life, but I do great at donating blood. They tell me I got good flow is what they say. So, you know, that's always my pickup line. You can't tell by looking at me, but I got great blood flow. Let me tell you, you'll be lucky to have this blood flow in your relationship. So I give great blood or plasma, same idea. So I'll be heading over there this afternoon to donate plasma, and we'll be out there next week for a couple of shows with CSL Plasma because next week is Donor Appreciation Week all week long. So I'll give you more information. There'll be food trucks at CSL Plasma next week for Donor Appreciation Week, and they have two different locations in North Charleston. They'll be giving away things all week long. So I'll give you more information all of next week, and we'll be out there, of course, on Monday after the weekend. But I'm heading over there in a couple of hours to go give some plasma at CSL Plasma. I did it last year. We talked about it on the air last year. I mean, it's just like donating blood. If you're somebody who's donated blood before, right, the plasma is really not much different. The process is different. For you, the experience really isn't much different. It's a little bit longer. It takes a little bit longer, but it's, you know, they give you a little bit like you're like on a bed. It's pretty comfortable. You sit there, you bring your iPad. All good. So I'll be doing that later on to kick off the weekend. Settle myself down with some plasma donation. Looking forward to it. I'll be out there with the folks next week a couple of days. Hey, Shane Beamer was in town last night. Now, to take you behind the curtain, we had some technical issues here at the station last night that made Trent had to race back here. But in your time, actually, how did things go yesterday over there in North Charleston with the Gamecock folks and Bobby at Holy City Brewing
Company? It was awesome. Yeah, I mean, as soon as I left, it was packed to the gills. And I didn't get to hear any of the coaches speak, obviously, because of the technical issues. You know, business comes first, obviously. Had to run back here, make sure everything was okay. But it was great. I mean, it was packed to the gills. They had drinks flowing. There was food. Seemed like a good time. Bobby was enjoying himself. You know, everybody was having a good time. It was a great event. Beautiful space out there at the Holy City Brewing Company, the Porter Room, I believe it was called. Mm-hmm. Absolutely gorgeous out there. It was great. It was great to be out there right next to the water. It was awesome.
Yeah, it looked like from the photos I saw, at least for the actual event, it was a bit of a packed house.
Yeah, it was. It was from like 5:30 to 6. It got packed very quickly, and the bar line got to very long.
I can imagine. So hopefully, if you were out there, if you're a Gamecock fan there last night to hear from Coach Beamer and Lamont Paris, hopefully you enjoyed yourself. Saw Bobby, saw Trent, saw somebody, a young kid running out, a young man running out of the place.
Oh, not running, sprinting. Sprinting out of the play through the back door and going through the parking lot like a madman. All the news crews were kind of looking at me as I was sprinting in my khakis to my vehicle.
Yeah, are we missing a story right now? What's going on? That's what they thought. He looked like Ray Allen last night running away from me all those years ago, jumping into his limo. And I still love Ray. But yeah, Beamer was in town last night. Hopefully you were out there and heard him speak, and Lamont Patterson had a good time if you're a Gamecock fan over in North Charleston. And I think it's interesting for South Carolina. And by the way, I saw it. Beamer said he got his identity stolen this offseason. That's tough. Trent, you ever have some sort of issue like that before?
Yeah, I have, actually. You remember we were doing the show one time, and my social media accounts got hacked.
Right,
and so my entire phone got hacked, actually. So, yeah, there was about a 10-hour period there where I'd kind of lost everything. But
jeez,
the great folks at all the social media companies were able to get my account. The only thing was the Instagram account. They got into my Instagram account, and so I temporarily disabled it,
yeah.
And they disabled it completely, whoever hacked it, so I had to make a new one. But everything got back to me, all my banking stuff got back to me, so yeah. But that is the worst feeling in the world.
I'm sure.
Like, it is the scariest feeling in the world, because somebody else is on your phone with everything in your life is on there.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest fears. Is like the fear of waking up one day and looking at my bank account or something and realizing, wait a minute, what's going on? Oh, somebody stole my identity. Now, look, you don't want my identity. But that's always a big – so anyway, Shane Beamer, I saw that little anecdote that somebody stole his identity this offseason. So hopefully everything worked out there, because that is always a nightmare for these people. They ruin your credit and everything. So anyways, that's just a random side anecdote. But I think it's interesting. When I look at the two teams, the two Power 5 teams in state, Clemson, South Carolina – what I find fascinating about this is that for both teams this year, they're both coming off years last season where they're in different positions. Clemson was winning national championships. South Carolina's trying to rebuild. And so South Carolina had a successful year last year, an exciting year. Clemson, you know, Clemson fans, I know by the time the season ended, you were probably feeling a little better. Clemson fans are spinning it maybe in a positive. But compared to the start of the season to where Clemson wound up at the end of the season playing for Cheez-Its in Orlando, it was a disappointing year. What I find interesting about these two teams, that I think Clemson coming into this year has the same questions, and they're going to be very similar to last year's team. Defense is going to be really good. The big question, once again, just like last year, quarterback. Last year, the offense was such a struggle for Clemson. And their defense, they had the second-best defense in the country. And yet, they lost three games, which for them recently has been a lot. But also, you just think back to their wins. Their struggles were wins. They had so many one-possession games. They beat Florida State by only 10 points. They only beat Georgia Tech by one. A lot of close games because their offense couldn't run away from anybody, kept everybody in the game. And I think this year it's going to be exactly the same for Clemson. I think their defense is going to be really good. I have concerns about the offense. And if DJ plays better this year, Clemson will be better. And if DJ plays like he did last year, Clemson's going to have the same type of season as they did a year ago. Now, the one potential change to all of this would be if you make a move midseason to Cade Klubnik and he is some sort of star right away, and now you have a dynamic quarterback. That's the one thing that's the big unknown. Otherwise, this year's team, I think, is going to be very similar to last year's team. Great defense, not much of a prolific offense, questions at the quarterback position that may hold you back week to week. Even if you win games, it may not be as decisive as we're used to at Clemson when you had a Trevor Lawrence, even a Deshaun Watson, you know, even a Kelly Bryant for a large part over the past couple of years. South Carolina, though, however, to me, is kind of the opposite. Where for South Carolina, I think this year's team could be very different from last year's team. Last year, the big strength was they were kind of like Clemson. Their defense was sneaky good last year, South Carolina, all things considered, especially compared to the years prior, ironically. You get rid of Will Muschamp, a defensive coach. You bring in Shane Beamer, more of a special team slash offensive guy, and the defense got better. Bit of an indictment to Will Muschamp. But the defense was really good for South Carolina last year. The offense, however, was pretty atrocious. Second worst in the SEC in yards per play and the most turnovers in the SEC. Now, of course, they used four different quarterbacks. A couple of those quarterbacks shouldn't have even been playing in the SEC, but they were. And yet, at the end of the year, South Carolina won a bowl game, finished with a winning record. So now you come in and you replace those quarterbacks with the Spencer Rattler. Plenty of reasons to be excited and optimistic about this year and think the offense is going to be a lot better. And you figure, if you're a Gamecock fan, we went 7-6 last year with maybe the worst offense in the conference, or at least the worst offense outside of Vanderbilt in the SEC. We went 7-6 last year using four different quarterbacks. 7-6 while playing in the toughest conference in football. Now we have Spencer Rattler. And Rattler, I know he may not be viewed as the same guy we thought he was just even a year ago, but at one time we were talking about him being the number one pick and a Heisman winner. at Oklahoma. And yes, South Carolina's a little different. He's not going to be playing for Lincoln Riley, and he's not in the Big 12, and he won't have as much talent around him as South Carolina. But the Gamecocks last year, four times last year, we may forget this because, you know, you're looking forward to this year in Spencer Rattler. Four times last year, South Carolina didn't even score in the first half on offense. In a third of their games last year, they got shut out in the first half. It was the third worst in the country, their first half offense. Only worse was New Mexico and Temple for first half offense last year. That's where South Carolina was offensively. And by the way, New Mexico and Temple won a combined six games. South Carolina won seven in the SEC. So it was really impressive what South Carolina did, going still just 7-6 with how bad the quarterback play and the offense was a year ago. Now, along with Spencer Rattler, right, the leading rusher coming back, running back from last year has like 250 yards. So, you know, there's optimism in the running back room, but maybe still some things need to be proven. Offensive line. I think the offensive line will be better. They were in a new system last year. Now, second year in this offensive system, and you're bringing back almost the entire offensive line. That's good. That's important for Spencer Rattler. So the offensive line should be better this year. Quarterback should be a lot better than last year. The offense, therefore, you would like to think, should be better. However, my concern for South Carolina is that I wonder if the defense will be as good. The concern for South Carolina's defense is that, you know, last year the secondary was really good. I think the secondary will be the strength again this year. The front seven will be the bigger concern on defense. If they could get after the quarterback and also stop the run, a couple of areas they struggled last year. They were bottom three in the SEC last year in those two categories. I don't know how much better they'll be this year. They certainly would probably have to be. But the other big thing, too, for the defense, the reason why I would be concerned about the defense is that they led the SEC in takeaways last year defensively. And that's something, if you listen to the show, you know I talk about this all the time. The Chicago Bears went through it with Khalil Mack and that great defense a couple years ago. Turnovers, you cannot rely on. Turnovers are such an inconsistent stat. Turnovers, the analytical crowd will tell you turnovers are not a product of good defense. It's more a product of good luck. And so when you get a lot of takeaways one year, you're not going to get them the next. Vice versa. If you turn the ball over a lot on offense one year, you're not going to turn it over as much the next. Fumbles are a 50-50 proposition. So if a team recovers more than half of the fumbles, that's considered good luck. Because regardless of, you may fumble and have five teammates around you. The analytical crowd will tell you, no, every time you fumble, you have a shot to get the ball. David, it's a 50-50 thing. So if you recover more than half of your fumbles, that's considered good luck. You're not going to have that same luck year after year after year. It's hard for a defense to rely on turnovers. South Carolina led the conference in turnovers. So my point in all this being, Clemson, I think, will be very similar to last year. Defense is going to be really good, and we're just going to have to wait and see if the quarterback can be good enough. South Carolina, I think they're kind of going to be the opposite of last year. Last year, the offense was awful, and the defense was really good. I'm not telling you the defense is going to be awful this year, but I think the defense will take a step back, and the offense will take a step forward for South Carolina. And last year, it was a case of first to 24 would win. This year, it may be slightly different. Again, I don't think the defense is suddenly going to be terrible this year. I don't think it'll be as tough as it was a year ago. I don't know if they'll lead the SEC in takeaways again. That's a huge balancing statistic. I mean, when you get that many takeaways, your offense is so bad, but you get some short fields, you keep the other team from scoring, you get those takeaways, get fewer possessions for the other team. That's a huge number that can balance out things on the field. I don't know if you can rely on that this year. But I'll also say offensively, I would hope they can score more in the first half, get more production from the quarterback position with Spencer Rattler. So for Clemson, I view them as being very similar to last year, the big question, quarterback, and then, of course, the coordinators. South Carolina, I think Spencer Rattler's a big upgrade. I think the offensive line will be better. I think the offense overall will be better. The defense, however, may not be quite as good as last year. So South Carolina could have a little bit of an opposite identity as they did a year ago, where Clemson will be very much the same. Clemson introduced their new baseball coach yesterday. He had his press conference. I thought he did well. Eric Bakich was introduced as new coach of Clemson baseball. Here's a couple of things that he had to say, first talking about what brought him to Clemson.
In 126 years of Clemson baseball history, we are yet to win a national championship. And I don't see any reason why we can't have that lofty goal year in and year out. And that's what we'll be striving for. That's how we'll be recruiting, and that's how we'll be developing.
I like that. That's the goal. Look, he got Michigan to the national championship game in 2019, couldn't beat Vanderbilt, but just getting there was pretty impressive. The only time Michigan had made it to the national title, first time for a Big Ten team since the 60s, first time for any team up north since the mid-70s. It was pretty impressive, that run a few years ago. And I talked about this when he was hired earlier this week, but if you want to win championships in college baseball, this is kind of the area you have to come to. That's why he's here at Clemson. As he said yesterday at his press conference, that's the goal. We want to win national championships. Here was the other clip from Bakich yesterday talking about the rivalry with South Carolina.
Another reason to come to Clemson is for the Clemson-South Carolina rivalry. We will take this rivalry very seriously and respect it every single day by how we prepare and train. Regardless of championships or rivalries, we'll narrow our sights down to the number one. One day, one game, one inning, one pitch, one rep at a time.
Bakich yesterday. I thought he did a good job at that press conference being introduced as new head coach at Clemson. I think that's what you want to hear about that rivalry with South Carolina. When we come back, which team in college football could kind of be like last year's Bengals of the NFL? I'll explain next. It's the Tomorrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Tomorrow Midday Show.
Who could be the surprise team of college football this year? The Morrow Midday Show at Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Last segment played some of the clips from Eric Bakich, new coach of Clemson baseball, getting introduced yesterday. Thought he did a good job. Thought he touched on all the buzzwords. Right, talk about winning a national championship. That's good. That gets the folks excited. Talk about the importance of that South Carolina rivalry. That's good. Playing to the audience. Very good. I thought he did a good job yesterday. We'll see how he does as the actual head coach of Clemson. The one thing I will say is he was clearly just reading off the paper. Now, I get it. But, I don't know, I think introductory press conference, I think we need a little better than just simply reading a long statement off a paper. It's like when you used to give a presentation, the people in class that would just read off the PowerPoint slides, they'd read the whole slide. The slide would just be all the text they want to say. It's like their cue card. And just a lot of words on the screen, they just stand there and read the whole thing. It's like, it's not the best presentation. Now, you want to ad-lib a little bit, have it memorized, just have those buzzwords written down that jog the memory. Anyways, I thought he did a good job, though.
That's like at a wedding, right? If somebody's making a speech at a wedding, never be the guy to read or a gal to read from a piece of paper. I less like, especially at the reception, if you're giving a toast or something, don't pull out a little note card. Just go from the hip. Just go.
Well, hold on now.
Wait a minute.
I may have to contradict myself on this now. I think that's the one situation, because I think where people get themselves in trouble is they try to do that thing and then they just drag on and they kind of confuse themselves and don't know where they're going to go next. There's no structure to it. And now they're just jib-jabbing up there about their lifelong friend for 10 minutes. It's like, all right, like, where are we going with all
have
this?
Have an idea of mm-hmm. where you want to go. But I don't know, Luke. I just lose some respect for people when they hop up there and they say, wait one second. And they just pull out a little paper. And they're like, John was my best friend since we were 7. It's like, just go.
Yeah.
Just go. Let it rip, best man. Let it rip.
There's a happy medium.
Yeah.
Like I said, jot down some key words in order of like the stories you want to tell. And then you have your structure. Okay, I'm going to hit this, I'm going to hit this, I'm going to hit this. Not verbatim, word for word, but you know this is what I'm going to do. Which, I'll be honest, that's what I do a lot of times with the segments, the topics of this show, so that I keep it all straight in my head. This is what I want to make sure I touch on, and this is the order I want to do it in. And I'll put a little bullet points. All right, talk about this, then this, then this, and let's go put it in this order to keep everything organized. Because otherwise, everything will go crazy. I'll be all over the place, which sometimes I am. I'm a scatterbrain to begin with. I got so many thoughts going on in my head that I want to make sure I get to. So, yeah, I think there's a happy medium. I do agree with you because it is like supposed to be personal and emotional at a wedding. It does seem a little off if you're just reading a script, essentially. But I think people are so worried. I've done weddings before as the officiant. I've never had to do like a speech at a wedding. I think people are so worried they want to make sure they nail it, that they type it all out. Probably read it over a bunch of times, and then, you know, I got to stick to this script.
I don't know. You and I might be different, where we're like, it's a, there's a little bit more comfortability, I guess, like when you get up there and I feel like you're at a party or something. Like, I gave a toast at a 70th birthday party. I was the first person to speak, stood up on the mic, didn't have anything planned, didn't know I was going to speak, kind of murdered. You know what I'm saying? Like, did pretty well. So, but there is, you're right, like, have an idea, have some key words, maybe a story or two that you have in your mind, but don't pull out the big paper and unfold it and then start reading line for line. Like you said in the, like in college, in the presentations,
just go.
Yeah. You know, like give us a little synopsis of the slide. Don't read right off of it. You wrote that. I understand.
You're like George Costanza when he worked at that company. He didn't know if he was hired or not at a certain company. So he just shows up to work there, starts working there all week, and then they throw a birthday party, and he's the one that gives the speech for the birthday toast for his coworker, who he has no idea who these people are. That's like you. You're at a 70 birthday party. Trent crashed somebody's 70th birthday party. He's the one standing up giving the toast.
I mean, the microphone was there, Luke. Come on.
Somebody had to say some words. Why not? So, yeah, anyways, happy medium. But people are so afraid of public speaking that I guess the number one fear. The old joke, right? You'd rather be in the casket than be the one giving the eulogy at the funeral. People are more afraid of public speaking than dying. Number one fear. So I get it. But in the case of Backage, like, you want to get up there, you want to really inspire. And he was just sitting there, like, literally just head down, reading off a paper. I don't know. I thought he did a good job, though. I thought what he said was good. Anyways. Which team could be the surprise in college football? You know, yesterday we talked about in the NFL, who could be this year's version of the Cincinnati Bengals. Well, I was thinking about the same thing this morning for college football. Now, college football, again, it's so predictable that it would be hard to think of a surprise team going all the way to the championship. But Cincinnati, the criteria being Cincinnati at the NFL level, I know, apples and oranges, but the Bengals did not make the playoffs the year prior. So I thought for college football, what about teams that have never made the playoffs? What team that has never made the playoff, because there's plenty of them, could actually not only make the playoff this year for the first time, but make a run to the national title game? Because last year, when you look at college football last year, we got close. Michigan had never made the playoff. They made it last year. Cincinnati never made the playoff. They were in the playoff last year. But as close as we got, we were still very far away because both teams were blown out in their semifinal games. And we clearly, right, we got the two better teams, Georgia, Alabama, in the national championship game. So, I think this year we may get some surprises. Some teams make the playoff for the first time, but can they actually get to the national championship? Can they actually win the national championship? I'm not so sure. I think the top candidates are teams that we've been discussing throughout this offseason, the same teams that we keep trying to pump the tires of. I would say Texas A&M. I'm not as high on Texas A&M as most people. But they did almost make the playoff 2 years ago, beat Alabama last year. That's a good stepping stone. And I know they had the best recruiting class this year, but I'm more concerned about the last couple years, and they have an average top 10 ranking last 4 years. So there's a lot of talent on this roster. Can Jimbo Fisher finally put it all together to the point where they can make the playoff? The SEC, right, they had two playoff teams last year. Could A&M be one of those two if they get another two again this year? USC would be another popular pick. Because Lincoln Riley, Caleb Williams, all the talent out there, and the Pac-12 is wide open. I'm big on Utah, so I would say Utah is another one. Utah was in the Rose Bowl last year. That was good exposure for them in the sense that you probably don't pay a lot of attention to Pac-12 football or Utah. Then you watch them in the Rose Bowl and thought, like, wow, actually, maybe. This program's pretty good. And now they bring back that a lot of those pieces from that team. They bring back that offense. And the coach and the coaching staff and the Pac-12, again, wide open. Utah be another. And then the fourth one I would give you would be a Texas. If, and I think this is a big if, but if Quinn Ewers is, as advertised, they have the best running back in the country already. Sarkisian knows offense. This offense could be very exciting if the quarterback is there. But that's a big if. We haven't seen him. I don't know. He's a big unknown. And now he's already in his second program here in college. He left high school early, went to Ohio State just to get paid. Now he's at Texas. I don't. Well, I have no idea what to expect. But a lot of people are very high on Texas. Vegas is high on Texas. And mostly, I would imagine, because of the new quarterback they brought in, Quinn Ewers. So if he is as good as advertised, Texas could be very intriguing in a wide-open Big 12. So those are the four teams for me that I would give an actual chance to. A&M, USC, Utah, Texas, that they've never made the playoff before. Those are the four I'd give a chance that not only do they make the playoff for the first time this year, but they actually get to a national title game. Now, Texas A&M comes from the SEC, so I'd probably give them the best chance because, as we've seen, the SEC has always fared the best as just an overall conference in the playoff. Oklahoma would win the Big 12, then they get embarrassed, right? Notre Dame would be the top independent team, embarrassed. Cincinnati would come from the group of five, they get embarrassed in the playoffs. You know, Washington out of the Pac-12 got embarrassed. Michigan State out of the Big 10, embarrassed. But the SEC always holds their own. So I guess maybe Texas A&M would have the best chance come playoff time. They'd be the most prepared coming out of the SEC. And then USC's got a lot of firepower, so maybe they'd be number two, Utah three, and then Texas still, to me, is such a wild card. I don't think Texas will be in playoff contention this year. I don't think they'll be as good as most people expect. I put Texas this year, I don't know, 8-9 wins maybe. I don't think they win the Big 12. I'm not as high end. We hear about Texas every year, right? Is Texas back? And people are just waiting for a reason to believe this is going to be the year. This year will be different. Texas is going to be much better. You got to show me something before I start believing in you. So while I'll acknowledge Texas could be one of those teams, I also don't give them a huge opportunity, a huge chance to actually pull it off. Four teams, I would say, could be, if you want to call them, you know, this year's Cincinnati Bengals of college football. A team that, forget missing the playoffs last year, they have always missed the playoff, but this year can make a run to the championship. Texas A&M, USC, Utah, Texas, in that order, I would say. Realistically, Texas A&M may be the only team that has a real shot at doing it. Maybe USC as well. But like last year, right, Michigan, Cincinnati got to the playoff for the first time. Could have happened last year. Yeah, both teams got blown out. They were overwhelmed by their playoff opponent. And something similar probably happened this year to any of those teams getting there for the first time. When we come back, we do it around this time each and every day. Time for Trent's Takes. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Hey, don't forget another blood drive's going on. A Red Cross blood drive at Cruise Subaru coming up Wednesday, June 29th, so less than 2 weeks from now, but we're letting you know early. All donors will receive a $35 gift card for service, parts, accessories at Cruise Subaru, so keep that in mind. June 29th over at Cruise Subaru in North Charleston, the Red Cross blood drive. Visit redcrossblood.org, use sponsor code CRUISE. To schedule your appointment today. Their latest blood drive over there, Cruise Subaru, in about 10 days. Hey, we do it around this time each and every day. We find out what's on the mind of the producer. It's time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, what an incredible, incredible NBA Finals series that we just had. To all the NBA haters out there in the world, you can't say, you know, too much about this series. I mean, really, the physicality was there, Luke. The defense was very, very good, especially last night. I mean, there were some foul calls, but there wasn't a ton. They were really letting them play last night. One of my favorite series in quite some time, you know, to be perfectly honest. Boston, the newcomers versus the Warriors. It seems like the old heads now, which they used to not be the old heads, but now they're the old heads, still getting it done. Absolutely incredible, and I will point out over the last three games, just so happened to be 8-1 in my props. Went 3-0 last night, no big deal. But it was so cool, man, to see this Warriors team, who I feel like I've been watching my entire life, basically growing up and seeing this dynasty happen. Seeing Steph Curry, who started incredibly slow in that game at the start, turn it on because he knew. I mean, gosh, Luke, in the third quarter, he hit a three, and I think they went up 12, if I'm not mistaken, and he was already pointing to his ring finger. That was savage. And then he hit the three with about 3 minutes left in the ballgame to put him up double digits and did the, you know, sleepy sign like he did to the Mavs in game two. The guy's an absolute G. I really am sick of the conversations about, you know, where is he on the hierarchy of the greatest players of all time. He's in those conversations now. You talk about the Magics, you talk about Bird, Jordan, LeBron, you add Steph Curry in that conversation. And personally, he's been in that conversation for me, Luke. I've always had him within my, you know, pantheon of greatest NBA players. There is no doubt in my mind that he has surpassed anybody else on that point guard list and is now officially an NBA Finals MVP. He didn't need that to cement his legacy, like you said, Luke. I know Mr. Artest said otherwise, but I personally think that he was already one of the greatest of all time. It was also awesome to see Klay Thompson. I know he didn't have the greatest series. He's definitely not the same. I think I saw something 941 days away from basketball. Oof. Yeah, you know, which is absolutely crazy. He had an Achilles tear, which was a full tear, by the way, and a full ACL tear with an MCL, I believe, in there as well. And the guy comes back, you know, he hits some good shots, especially in game five. He absolutely went nuclear. Love seeing game six Klay come out. And Draymond last night, Draymond stepping up in the moment. I mean, he hit a couple threes that were great. He had some great passes. I think he finished with a double-double, if I'm not mistaken. That's what you need from a guy like Draymond and Steve Kerr. I mean, nine championships, like you mentioned now. This is one of the greatest dynasties the NBA has ever seen. You have to put them up there with the Bulls, with the Spurs, even though, like you said, that they were kind of, you know, panned out a little bit. The Lakers, the Warriors are right there in that conversation. And Steph Curry, in my opinion, probably the greatest point guard to ever do it when it's all said and done, especially if he wins one more. I mean, imagine if this team stays together, if they're able to pay Andrew Wiggins, pay Jordan Poole, which we saw on their Instagram story last night. They were not only celebrating the NBA championship, but they were both talking about how they're going to get a bag. Young fellas definitely going to get that bag after the series that both of them had. Jordan Poole, by the way, never a doubt when it came to the props. Always take Jordan Poole's over, especially in this final series. He only let me down one time, Luke. One time. And Al Horford, too. Got to give Horford a shout-out. He never let me down this entire series. But you and I said it. Warriors in six. Ended in the perfect way. And now, Luke, we're just waiting for football season. I know we got baseball, but football season's around the corner. What an amazing NBA final series. I'm glad that I was a part of it with you and everybody. It's just been so fun to watch, Luke.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, it's interesting. It went six games. There was a lot of intrigue. The Warriors won the final, you know, three, and they were kind of dominant. The games, we never had really that end of the game moment. Like some sort of game winner coming down the home stretch. But I still found the games to be intriguing, even if the final score was always double digits. We haven't had a game seven, though, you know, in the NBA Finals in 7 years. So we were missing some of those late game dramatics or like a seventh game. But I'm with you. I thought it was a very intriguing NBA Finals. It's fun to watch Steph Curry when he's on. It was an intriguing matchup of the young Celtics against the dynastic Warriors as they're a little bit older. I enjoyed the NBA Finals. I enjoyed the NBA playoffs. You know, I am happy for Steph Curry to get that Finals MVP and for the Warriors to get another championship. As I said earlier this week, usually we hate these teams that always win. I don't know. For some reason, Golden State comes off very likable. So I got no problem with them being this year's NBA champions.
Yeah, I mean, they're likable guys. But it's so funny, Luke. This morning, immediately on, you know, Get Up and First Take, well, can the Warriors do it again next year? You know, that was the big conversation. It's like, let's celebrate what this team just did from in 2019 having the worst record in the NBA to winning an NBA championship about 2.5-3 years later. Absolutely unbelievable. A tip of the cap. Tip of the cap to the Golden State Warriors.
For sure.
And let's stop. If they win another one, there's a bigger conversation to go ahead, and I hope they do, because if they keep that, do you think they'll be able to keep that team around, the Pools and the Andrew Wiggins, some of their role guys? But Warriors pay. That's what these owners do. They pay everybody. They paid Klay. They paid Draymond. They paid Steph Curry, and I think Andrew Wiggins is about to get paid. Do you think they can keep this team together to potentially go on another run? Also, Kendrick Perkins was talking about, when the NBA is healthy next year, it's going to be a lot different for the Warriors. I really disagree. I think this team could do it year in and year out if they're healthy. I think it's not about the other teams being healthy. It's about if the Warriors are healthy and Steph Curry being healthy.
Yeah, and, you know, when you talk about the health, like the Nuggets were banged up this year, the Lakers and LeBron and the Clippers, I would say LeBron at this point, right? I don't know. He's not the same LeBron. The Clippers and the Nuggets, compare them to Golden State. I mean, the Warriors just have that winning ability. I know Kawhi Leonard's won a lot in his career, but, you know, the Clippers have been a bit of a disaster with him leading them. So it's not like we're talking about a dynasty that's like, this is what I'm trying to say. When the Warriors were down the last couple of years, they were injured, and you'd say, wait till they get healthy because they know what it's like to win championships.
Right.
It's not the same idea with like the Nuggets. Like, wait till the Nuggets get healthy. Well, when they've been healthy, they haven't won anything. When the Clippers have been healthy, they haven't won anything. So yeah, all these teams will be better, but it's not like you're waiting on this incredible championship team to get healthy. The other thing for the Warriors, look, even like Looney, I think is due for a contract. He'll get some money. They do have, if Kuminga pans out, Wiseman pans out, and then you have Jordan Poole, those are three guys that are 22 and younger. So even though they have these old, you know, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, they do have this young core of talent that if they can develop that next group, that can also carry them forward, surrounding them with like a Steph Curry, keeping some of the veterans. And I just trust Golden State with the way they've built this team over the past decade that I imagine, yeah, they'll continue to be at the top of the league here for the next couple of years.
Yeah, never doubt the heart of a champion. Been saying it all week, saying it about the Lightning and saying about the Warriors. Worked out for the Warriors. We'll say the same for the Lightning. They'll win in seven. Now, Luke, 2026 World Cup. Obviously, the World Cup's coming up in Qatar. I believe that's how you say it. I'm not sure. I've heard some other pronunciation. Can you correct me on that if possible?
No, that's how we'll say it.
Okay, perfect. That's what we're rolling with. That's what we'll go with then. But 2026, Luke. Looks like the World Cup is coming back to America. Now, they announced the potential host cities for the World Cup, and I'll give you a couple, and you give me which one you would like the World Cup to be at or think it's best suited for the World Cup, because personally, I can't really pinpoint a city here and think, oh, yeah, that's definitely where we could have a World Cup. Atlanta, Boston, Dallas, Houston, Los Angeles, Miami, Philly, San Francisco, Seattle. Are any of those? I would say Los Angeles probably would be the place, but I was kind of thinking either Miami could be good for soccer. I know they love the soccer down there. And Atlanta usually has, like, they're able to hold big events. I don't know. I want your take on this because I'll definitely try to. If the World Cup is here and America is playing in it and it's in America, I'm there. There's no doubt about it. I'd love to be in that environment.
And Atlanta has, I guess, done a really good job supporting Atlanta United FC.
Yes.
So I guess they have a good, like, soccer community around there, which I wouldn't have guessed. Yeah, my first thought was Miami. And then, L.A.'s out. You could put anything in L.A. And you'll be fine. There's so many people. It's so big. So many different spaces out there. But my first thought was Miami. Those would probably be the two, Miami and L.A. And then, as you said, like, Atlanta could be a sneaky one with how good of a soccer culture they've built recently. It's not as big of an area as in L.A., but that could be another good option as well. But my first thought would probably be Miami.
Yeah, no doubt. And then, like, Toronto is in there as well. They could potentially do it. I don't think Philly would be good. New York, I mean, they would have it at the Meadowlands. I don't think that would work, you know, especially having everybody on that. If everybody's staying in Manhattan, that's going to be a big problem. There's no doubt about that. But I'm very excited, Luke, because I think the World Cup always, it's like the Olympics for me. It's always been on my bucket list of things. Like, my main, like, goal on my bucket list is to see a 100-meter final at the Olympics. That is my goal in life. I want to see it so bad. I think I might be going to Paris for the 2023 Olympics, so I really hope I'm able to get there. But the World Cup is up there, too. Not that I'm a huge soccer fan. I just, when you watch the atmospheres and the vuvuzelas are going and there's smoke in the air, it's like, how is this environment being created just off an international soccer game? Like, it's unbelievable. So if it's here, Luke, I think the Moral Midday Show will definitely have to do a couple shows from wherever it is, potentially Miami or Atlanta for a couple
days. That'd be great. Yeah, if they were close enough, you could get to Miami or Atlanta.
Absolutely.
That'd be awesome. The only soccer I watch, Charleston Battery, and the World Cup. So, yeah, I do like the World. I'm not a big soccer guy. I do like the World Cup. And when we had the World Baseball Classic, which is not exactly the same. World Cup's a lot bigger than the World Baseball Classic. But similar idea, they held that in Miami when we had it here in the States. At this point now, that was probably close to a decade ago. That was in Miami. And it went okay. So I think the World Cup could serve well in Miami as well in a few years. So I'll be looking forward to it. That's, like I said, that's the only soccer I really pay attention to.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm up early in the morning, my family are big Tottenham fans, so I'll see if Tottenham game's on and turn that on. But I don't know enough about the players to really, like, truly get invested into it. I could spend time and, like, actually get it because it is a cool, like, thing. It's probably a lot more cool live. That's what my brother has always told
me.
Like,
yeah.
He studied abroad for a while in Europe and went to a Barcelona game and went to all these other games. He said it's completely different than any other American sports atmosphere. So that's probably the only reason I really want to go to the World Cup, because you got fans from all over the world who are just so passionate. Just to see that would be probably one of the cooler things ever.
Yeah. In fact, now that you say that, when I play my pickup basketball on Wednesday, one of the guys there went to the World Cup about a decade ago, and yeah, he was telling me about it a few weeks back, and he was raving about the experience and what it was like. Soccer, that soccer culture and those environments and atmosphere is, in other countries, it's off the charts.
Yeah.
So that certainly would be a cool experience.
Yeah, my mother went to the Olympics in Greece when it was in Athens in 2004. Like, you know, with all the history of the Olympics being in Greece, like, she said it was unlike anything she's ever been to.
I'm sure. You know, like, the Olympics and the World Cup, too, are some of the most watched events for sports. And obviously because they bring in other countries, but, like, even in this country, because there's just something about it when you have all the countries come together. It's a little bit different. Obviously, it's just bigger. It's the whole world compared to, like, the NBA. So, like, the Olympics, even in this country, the Olympics do big numbers. historically. This past Olympics, not so much. But historically, the Olympics do big numbers here in the States. Even the World Cup's popular because, yeah, when you have all the different countries and you're battling for, like, world supremacy in that sport, you know, that's always a big thrill, big deal. I had a buddy in high school back in the day that used to wake up before school to watch the Italian soccer games. And I said, no, thanks. What are you doing? I'd rather get my sleep.
True Italian.
Yeah, he was. you're not going to get me up at like 5 a.m. to be watching Italian soccer. Get out of here. But the World Cup, that's when I become a big Italian soccer fan. Let me tell you, love the World Cup.
Oh, so do you go Italy first?
No, I can't. I don't know. I can't do that. I kind of do, if I'm being honest. But of course,
they're
I root
much better.
For. Yeah, they are. So that's why I'm a front runner. Whichever team's better, and it's usually Italy. So, but yeah, it's a fun time. In fact, growing up in an area, you know, around here, there's not a lot of Italians around here. And that's fine. But growing up in an area where it's heavy Italian, oh, man, I remember when Italy won the World Cup going back, I don't know, almost 20 years at this point. It was crazy. Like, the parades and people all had the Italian flags. You go to a local bakery, and while the games were going on, everybody was into it. It was a really cool environment. It was the first time that where I grew up, like, people were really into soccer because Italy was about to win the World Cup. And usually didn't have that. But it was the pride of the people because there's so many Italians up there in the Northeast that they all – suddenly everyone was a soccer fan. They all came out of the woodwork. But yeah, that was cool. So I like the World Cup because of that pride and passion it brings for people for their countries, or just where their ancestors came from too.
Yeah, I mean, that's where, like, every 4 years, everybody in America suddenly becomes soccer fans. You know, we're chanting, "I believe that we can win." You know, in bars across America, while we're getting blown out by Honduras. I mean, it's just what happens, folks. Can't change anything. But how about this? You just go watch the women. Our women will dominate. Yeah. Like, we can get behind them, but. Our men's team, I mean, let's be honest, you know, we're in a tough group, too. I mean, we got England and Wales in there. That's difficult going into the World Cup this year.
And this year it's going to be during football season, right? It's in the fall?
Middle of football season.
Yeah, that's going to be a little tough.
Games are going to be in the mornings, so right. That's pretty good. You can catch a couple games every so often.
Yeah. A little football doubleheader, right? The real football. And then you watch the American football, too.
We tied with El Salvador, though, you know, on a muddy field in the middle of nowhere. And it was a difficult performance by our boys. But we need to step up. Step up when it matters. Christian Pulisic needs to get going, Luke Morrow.
Apparently, he needs more fans out there.
Yeah.
That'll get him going.
That's right.
Yeah. Calling out the hot soccer fans. Hey, we'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention, campers. Lunch has been canceled today. Due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up hour two of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We've been talking this week about bad NFL teams trying to get better. You know, we were talking about the Jets the other day. Yeah, I'm not so sure about this Zach Wilson already in his second year. I think the Jets have had a really good offseason. I don't know if they have the quarterback. But I'm starting to come around on Zach Wilson because I saw this from yesterday. The Yankees were at home playing the Tampa Bay Rays. Zach Wilson was in attendance with apparently his girlfriend, had front row seats, of course, right behind home plate. They were doing the wave at Yankee Stadium. And a lot of publicity, a lot has been made about Zach Wilson really not having the wave, not getting involved in the wave. And for that, I've become a bigger Zach Wilson fan. In fact, I'm watching the video now, the people sitting next to him. People in front row seats behind home plate are busy doing the wave at a baseball game. Zach Wilson does not stand up, and I assume his girlfriend, the woman with him, just grabs his arm and lifts up one of his arms for him as they're both seated. I'm with Zach Wilson. I've said this for years. Cut out the silly wave at baseball stadiums, especially when it's a close game. This was the Yankees against the Rays. As big of a game as you're going to get in the division. The Yankees end up winning on a walk-off. It's a close game. What are we doing the wave for? Especially when you're dropping hundreds of dollars to sit in those front row seats behind home. Stop with the silly wave. Cut it out from baseball games. They were doing it at the concert I was at a few weeks ago. Everyone's doing the wave. Ah, so tacky. Get the wave out. I'm with Zach Wilson. And for that, maybe the Jets will be better this year because of Zach Wilson's hate of the wave. Hour 3 next.